What do you think it will take to repair the disillusionment between young people and politics?
Well, I think what we're actually seeing is a huge change already, because I don't think young people have ever not been interested in politics. I think for a couple of decades, party politics looked very distant, very uninteresting, and very much not addressing young people's concerns. But young people have always been involved in organisations, campaigns, things like People and Planet, Amnesty International. But what I think is increasingly happening is I'm seeing, you know, particularly 14-year-olds following me on Twitter, people of all ages, but particularly the young, are getting engaged in politics. And I think the level of political engagement, is particularly among young people, is higher than it's been for decades. And that's enormously exciting. And, you know, I have a phrase where I say politics should be something that you do, not that's done to you. And the more that people do politics, the more that we're actually going to change the nature of politics and get it working for the common good, not just for the few rich that it is now.
Absolutely. Staying on the subject of the autumn budget, George Osborne has U-turned on tax credits by postponing the cuts until universal credit kicks in. Now, how devastating will this be to working people?
Well, it's going to be enormously devastating. And I think it's worth focusing on, first of all, that, you know, this wasn't really George Osborne's decision. We had the unlikely situation where the House of Lords was actually acting as the champion of the poor, just as the House of Lords has also been acting as the champion of the young in demanding votes at 16 in the EU referendum. So George Osborne was forced into this position. But as you rightly identify, actually, this is only a short-term change. If the universal credit computer system works, which is something of an if, then we're still left in a situation where people are going to, increasing numbers of people are going to see their benefits cut to the point where they're simply not going to be able to survive. And the other big thing that's coming in that there's been very little focus on, and I think we really need to swing the focus to, is the benefits cap, which is being dropped outside London from 26,000 to 20,000. And, you know, I've seen figures just looking at the area of Merseyside, and we're looking at 39,000 people being made homeless in April just by that benefit cap. And that's just in Merseyside. So around the country, that's going to have massive impacts. Basically, currently, outside London, you have to be a family of two adults and five children to be affected by the 26,000 cap, which means hardly anybody at all. But this new cap is going to affect families of two adults and two children, which means, of course, huge numbers of families.
The Chancellor has earmarked the money from the tampon tax for women's charities. Now, though this will give more funding to areas that need it, do you think women should have to pay for their own counselling?
Absolutely not. And I think you, Sisters Uncut, did a great protest in London, in Trafalgar Square, on Saturday, when they put some red dye into the fountains to make their point about this. And you also, I think, I mean, the way this was done, I'm sure George Osborne thought he was being terribly clever, but it really does feel like, and I think a lot of people experienced it as an insult, particularly, and the key factor here really is that the women's refuges, essential services for women around the country, are being slashed away by the austerity applied to local government, which has left local government without the money to provide them to support charities and community groups that is providing those services. So, you know, this tiny amount of money as an offering done in this way, it really does feel like a sop and a real insult to people's intelligence and understanding.
In light of our first fully Conservative budget, do you think Jeremy Corbyn is an effective opposition to a majority Conservative government?
Well, I think one of the great things about the election of Jeremy Corbyn as Labour Party leader is that we're starting to see the end of, I think we're seeing the start of the end of neoliberal politics, of neoliberal Britain, whether you want to call it neoliberalism, neo-Thatcherism, call it what you like, a whole kind of political philosophy that greed is good, inequality doesn't matter, we can keep trashing the planet. That political philosophy has dominated our debate and our two major parties for the last few decades. And Jeremy Corbyn has really broadened out the terms of the debate of politics. And you know, that means that really the people who are being left isolated, looking extremist as they are the Tories. So I think, you know, we're in a period of great political flux, great political change. We're now in an age of multi-party politics. We're going to see many more changes, and Jeremy Corbyn's a sign of that.
Canada's representative cabinet is really refreshing to see, and I just wanted to know whether you thought we would ever see a 50-50 parliament in our lifetime.
I'm very confident about that because I think we're going to see major electoral reform very, very soon. I mean, the last election was the least proportional result in British history in terms of actually voters getting what they were voting for. This Tory government only has the support of 24% of eligible voters. That's how many people voted for them. And even when you look at the percentage of people voting, only 37% of people voted Tory. Our electoral system really is broken utterly out of date and needs to change. And one of the things that if we bring in proportional representation and forms of list system, is that very much, you know, it tends to encourage push parties towards more balanced placement of people in electable positions. And also, you know, we have some people who've been in their safe seats for decades, many of them male for historical reasons. Shaking things up would be a big step towards heading towards a 50-50 parliament.
Natalie, what's it like leading a party as women in the UK?
Well, I guess I've come through, spent a lot of my life as a journalist and in, as going way back as an agricultural science student in environments that are very much male dominated. So for me personally, you know, there are obviously challenges, but it's a situation I'm quite familiar with. But I really think, you know, that we need huge culture changes. I mean, Prime Minister's questions, and you have, you know, grown men and women, but mostly men, making chicken noises at each other across the chamber and similar kind of antics that, you know, 10-year-olds would be a bit embarrassed by. We really need to move away from that sort of politics.
And finally, Natalie, how ethical do you think the UK's response to the refugee crisis has been?
Well, I think it's been, you know, we have really utterly failed in this. It's deeply disappointing. If we go back to the Leader debates before the general election, you know, I was saying then that we should have been joining the UN programme for the most vulnerable Syrian refugees. We didn't do that. It was now, after David Cameron came under a lot of public pressure, you know, refugees welcome marches, lots of people doing the politics and saying this is not acceptable. David Cameron came out with the figure of accepting 20,000 Syrian refugees over the term of this parliament. Now that's 12 a day. It really is a very small number. And particularly if you contrast to the fact that Sweden, which has had a population less than a sixth of ours, has already accepted 190,000 refugees.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for talking to us, Natalie. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good day.